Our next speaker is Stephen Mosher, speaking on a college-level textbook, Understanding Scientific Theories of Origin, with Biblical and Theological Perspectives.
So we advance with this way?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you. Well, thank you. I'm very happy to have you all here. I am a co-author with Robert Bishop, Larry Funk, Ray Lewis, John Walton, who are my colleagues at Wheaton College, and we are a recipient of a ECF grant. I was here at a meeting, well, I wasn't here, but I was at the ASA meeting 8 years ago, and I gave a report on this course called Theories of Origins, and there was a subsequent paper and perspectives on the course. One of the things I said was that we don't have a textbook, and it was a unique course that a textbook would be appropriate, but we didn't have the time or the resources to create one ourselves. But the grant has given us that opportunity. Let's just read the course description. It's an examination of scientific theories of origins and development, such as Big Bang cosmology, Earth's formation and early history, origin of life, origin of species, history of life, and human origins. This is taught at Wheaton College. So we have the ability and the privilege to be able to get to the next part, look at relationships between biblical and scientific explanations, explore them for each topic. So as you see, it's team taught. We have an opportunity to go to the Field Museum to see the History of Life exhibit there, which is amazing. This is part of the general education offerings in the sciences. So it's not a required course, it's an elective in general education, but it is a sequel to a prerequisite, which would be a laboratory course in the sciences. It could be any laboratory course, general survey course in the sciences. But this course then fulfills the last remaining 4 credits that a student would need to complete their science. There are other opportunities. We get about 60 students a year in this class. Now, we don't like having a class with 60 students, but we do like that we can reach 60 students a year with this course. So we cover science content and biblical context. We do not emphasize alternative theories of origin. Sometimes students are disappointed. Oh, I thought you were going to do every theory of origin that's out there. We emphasize the mainstream scientific theories, and then we provide an opportunity for some explorations of biblical context. It's been taught since 1995, so it was really the offspring of a new general education program that we introduced in 1995 to have an interdisciplinary course in the sciences that dealt with origins. And it has been very successful. Every year, cap out at 60 students. And it's exciting that a team-taught class, although personnel have changed, is Bill Wharton here? Bill?
Yeah.
Thank you. Bill was on the faculty for that course for many years. So as the faculty have changed through the years, there's still been an enthusiasm for the course, which is really, I think, actually amazing for a course like that to last that long. So here are our co-conspirators. You can see philosophy and physics is covered by Bishop. John Walton, who we've already been introduced to today, we're privileged to have him give a biblical context. It's also, I can say, been a treat to see him develop these themes over the years. So what you read in Lost World of Genesis 1 and Lost World of Adam and Eve, he was, you know, practicing on us in that class. So that was very exciting over a period of about eight or nine years. I cover the geology aspects, history of Earth, Larry Funk chemistry, and Ray Lewis biology. We have invited an anthropology professor into the class to cover the physical anthropology aspect of human origins, and that personnel, those professors have changed quite a bit through the years. And right now, we're really not sure who's going to be able to do that because our physical anthropologists or our anthropologists left us this year. Here are the five authors and a dodo at the Oxford Museum last summer at one of the workshops, and the opportunity for us to interact with other grantees has been just amazing, to be able to swap ideas and to get encouragement, mutual encouragement. It's been a really wonderful experience. Well, we've been doing first day surveys very much like the surveys that Catherine talked about. We asked the students some of the same questions that are in typical Gallup polls or typical newspaper polls, and we all know those questions are pretty lame and they're not very helpful, but it's interesting to ask them. So for the question, the universe and Earth were created how many, you know, years ago, thousands, millions, billions? Well, in our response is 26% said thousands, 14% millions, and 60% said billions. Now, students will say that they come to Wheaton College very often with a young Earth creationist background, but actually by the time they've taken this class, they've had an Old Testament course, they've had a lab course in the sciences, and so many of them although they're still in process, they've really begun to deal with many of these questions. A question: evolution explains the history of life. Well, in our group, we get a lot of don't knows, which actually I think is great at the beginning of the class, that students will be open to learning, be teachable. 33% would say evolution explains the history of life, whatever that means. That's a little lower, actually, than a national response, apparently. 45% just say no, and 21% say no, don't know. Here's a slightly different question, same idea. There's plenty of scientific evidence against evolution in favor of the Bible's account of creation. I can't remember which organization asked that question, but we had some national data. And 31% said, yeah, there's plenty of evidence against evolution in favor of Bible's account of creation. 36% no, but 33% they say they don't know. And then here's, I think, a really important, here are a couple other questions that are similar. Evolution occurred guided by God. 50% actually said yes. Well, that's higher than the national average. 33% said they don't know. Evolution occurred with no interference from God. Well, 2%, that's one person, basically said yes. As you would expect, overwhelming majority of the class said no. But 19-20% said they didn't know. And then my favorite question as a geology professor: cavemen and dinosaurs coexisted. Oh, 24% said yes. And that's actually, though, lower than the national average. But, you know, 60% almost said they don't know. They just don't know. So that's really interesting. Those are the students that hadn't taken the geology class as their introductory. So let me walk through the textbook as we envision it. And it's almost complete. We're 90-plus percent complete with the writing. I'll tell you where we are right now with it. But it's really important for us that we nail for them an understanding of the Bible on origins. So John will start with this. We'll talk about basic hermeneutical points about authority from science and from the Bible. And locating, it's important to him to locate biblical authority in the author's intentions and therefore urge reading of Genesis as an ancient document. And that's very much a John Walton project, as you probably aware, the importance of an ancient Near Eastern view for understanding the context for what God is communicating in that text. And to contrast the ancient worldview to our modern one and contend that there's really no new scientific revelation given the Bible. Like suddenly in the 20th century we could understand what the Bible was trying to say about how God created the world scientifically. And then Robert, with his background in the philosophy of science and as a working physicist, developed for the students a comprehensive doctrine of creation and implications for scientific study. Now, we were using the term robust doctrine of creation. One morning, Robert woke up and said, no, I'm going to call it comprehensive doctrine of creation. But I like both terms. The idea is that, you know, really systematically survey the elements of the doctrine of creation, including ex nihilo creation. What does that mean? Creation is ministerial. That is, God made creation to participate in part of its own creation. That's really been a major theme here, I think, in this meeting. And that God works patiently in creation, just as he works patiently in our salvation and our sanctification. So we really see the whole saga of God working through history, working through natural history, and working in our lives with many illustrations from the biblical text. And then chapter 3, knowledge and faith and pursuing origins questions. So examining science and theology even in more depth as different ways of knowing. And then chapter 4, creation through lenses of science and theology. Here's the classic diagram, you know, about having the two books idea of natural and special revelation, scripture and creation, that they really can't be in conflict if God's the author of both. But it's through these filters that we, these tools we have of theology and science for the understanding of those that involve fallible translations, observations, and interpretations. And that's where our problems come from. And we introduce different approaches that people take. So students can think of their own journey. Were they in a science-first family where, you know, the science trumps everything, or a Bible-first family where the Bible trumps science, where there's apparent disagreement? Or was there an attempt at concordance, or whether it's concordance of, say, special creation with science, or concordance of, you know, day age with science? I mean, these are different concordance models, but then different kinds of non-concordance models. Also looking at what Robert calls two realms models, which would be kind of like the independence of Barber or Gould's, you know, non-overlapping magisteria. You've got two realms and they really don't overlap. They don't really touch each other. Or what Robert calls a partial views model, where each of these different insights that we get from science and from theology gives us part of the whole picture of reality. And I guess that would be close to a complementary view you're familiar with some of these views that have been around for some time. And then finally, biblical claims concerning cosmology. And this is really John's condensation of the lost world of Genesis 1, the in-depth analysis of Genesis 1, focusing first on the text and then on the similarities and differences that we find in ancient Near East cosmology, with an emphasis on order and function and sacred space rather than on the account of material origins. And to his credit, when John was traveling the world with his BioLogos grant, he still came back for every lecture that he was supposed to be there for the class. Then we move into Big Bang cosmology. Just see the chapter titles there that kind of cover incremental, you know, getting into the topic of understanding, you know, the data behind Big Bang cosmology, from electromagnetic radiation, you know, all the way through to the lives and deaths of stars. And then with each of the different parts that we have, this part being on cosmic origins, we conclude with a chapter that reflects on what we've learned and the doctrine of creation. Then we move into the origin and geologic history of the Earth. It's my part. Origin of the Earth and the solar system, which that chapter is already out of date. You know, I've already got to go back and rewrite it before we publish it. There's stuff coming out, you know, every every week, and I've got to put in a picture of Pluto now, I guess. It's the thing. But, John comes in and talks about biblical claims concerning the flood, because, of course, in a young earth creationist perspective, the flood is a very important geologic event in Earth's history. I like to follow that with a very historical look at geology, the history of the science. What were the historical roots of geology, looking at 19th century catastrophism and actually seeing the contributions of 19th century catastrophism to what became a more modern approach to geology through uniformitarianism. The present is the key to the past, but the important contributions that these catastrophists had to the emerging geology, but also to point out that those were not the same kinds of catastrophists that are around today in terms of what they're promoting about Earth's history. Actually, the catastrophists were very much old Earthers, but just had a view of catastrophes being very important in Earth's history. But with uniformitarianism, even that view really swung back a little bit towards some catastrophes in Earth's history with huge mass extinction events and things that are really important to the understanding of Earth's history. Nice little review of radiometric dating, look at plate tectonics as a theory for the Earth, how that theory developed and its importance in understanding Earth's history. And then finally, a chapter that looks at seven, I don't know where I came up with that number, but seven times in Earth's history, just looking at snapshot, what was the Earth like, you know, using plate tectonic continental drift maps and talking about the kinds of rocks, the kinds of resources, geologic resources, the kind of life that was around at seven times in Earth's history. And then concluding with a little summary chapter, the doctrine of creation in Earth's history. Then we get to origin of life, and Larry Funk likes to say this is the ultimate cold case in terms of science detective work. I mean, this is something that's still being worked on. There's no satisfying explanation for the origin of life yet. And he talks about another historical approach, you know, looking at Pasteur and spontaneous generation and abiogenesis and getting into prebiotic chemistry, chirality, all the different aspects of the important chemistry behind the living organisms, you know, just even the simplest cell, talking about information, alternative scenarios, RNA worlds, those kinds of ideas that are out there. And then a reflection on some of the anthropomorphic kinds of ideas, philosophical ideas about the origin of life. And then the origin of species and the diversity of life, talking about the development of the theory of evolution. It didn't just start with Charles Darwin. The modern synthesis of evolution, exploring the evidence, fossils, and genomes. As I mentioned, we go to the Field Museum, so it's an amazing opportunity. And I'll have students, and they'll say, I've never seen a dinosaur before. I was told it was a hoax. You know, I told they just made them up. But there sure are a lot of them in here. it doesn't happen that often, but it still does. Development of an extended synthesis of evolution, and then a reflection. And then into the human origins, John comes back talking about biblical claims concerning human origins. We have a chapter, a couple of lectures on the more of the physical anthropology. I call it the stones and the bones. We've got a really nice collection of models of the major hominin specimens that we're able to pass around the room. Then, of course, looking at the evidence from molecular biology and the human genome, and then follow it up with a reflection on the doctrine of creation in the image of God, we feel is really important for them to say, we're not taking anything away from you with respect to this important idea of being created in God's image. Now, here's an interesting post-survey. I don't have post-survey questions for all of those other questions, but we do ask questions that follow, because we've been using Deb and Lauren's book also in the course as a supplementary book, and these are the the models, five models that are in that book for different ways of who are Adam and Eve, recent ancestors. So that would necessarily be probably a young Earth perspective, recent representatives, which might be a little bit more like what John Walton has been proposing, a pair of ancient ancestors, group of ancient ancestors, and of course we haven't really developed this in the beginning of the course, so it's kind of hard to describe all these different models. So we just ask them in this way, or symbolic, or no position. So this is the first week survey. 29% of the class are comfortable with Adam and Eve as recent ancestors. So, and I think we even say less than 10,000 years in the question. And 21% recent representatives, 19% a pair of ancient representatives, and then probably 2 and 4 kind of mixed in there. Well, again, much more specificity by the end of the course, and they all are asked to write an essay where they state where they feel like they are, and what have they learned, where they come from, and to explore the idea of the being created in God's image. And here's how it changes, which is really pretty remarkable after a semester in the course. And also with the, I think, very much helped by the reading, having this textbook material available to them now. So look how ancient ancestors drops from, 30% down to 5%. And how, in this case, the representative idea is goes from 21 to 42%. And they're actually challenged to consider how this fits in with our own college's statement of faith, because it's a little bit problematic on with that, and they have to explain that. And then you can see that the group of ancient representatives is now something that they can grasp as a possibility, and so we include that, and that's around 32%. So there's still a range of views in the class, but there's clearly a lot of thinking going on, a lot of processing going on in the class. Let's see where the clock is. I guess I'm okay. So where are we? Well, we've completed most of the chapters for the book, and we've used many of those chapters for the last 2 years. We've had them available as PDFs, so on Blackboard the students could download the chapters. We asked them to evaluate the chapters for extra credit, which was very popular, but it was very helpful. But they had to do some work, and they really had, the amount of extra credit they got was proportionate to the number of chapters that they reviewed. But I found that very helpful, and in fact, for our report to BioLogos, after the second year, we used that data as our report. We have secured a publishing agreement with InterVarsity Press, which is very exciting to us. They don't typically publish textbooks, so that's going to be interesting to see how it looks in the end. So we'll be talking with them this year as we enter into that phase of submitting our material. We're completing and updating chapters. We're directing the production of original illustrations. I've been able to hire students who are talented. And they understand what I'm trying to convey because they're geology majors, and I've been very happy that we can have some original illustrations that aren't just taken from another textbook. And it's been fun to be able to come up with new ways of conveying information, of course, that I've been reading since I was an undergraduate. And we'll be securing expert reviewers. There's money in the grant to actually pay for some experts to review the individual chapters. So that's where we are today. Might be a year and a half before we see it, but we're very excited that it's in process. So thank you.
We have time for questions.
So you did all that in one semester?
That's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, we do. It's possible to do it. I feel really squeezed. I only get, like 5 lectures with them. But It seems to work. And, you know, they've had a science course. So for some of them, the geology one's going to be easy because it's kind of a review. For others, the biology is going to be kind of a review. So since they've had that lab course, there's going to be, you know, maybe a quarter of the content that isn't going to be completely new to them.
So that's a prerequisite.
Exactly. Yes?
See, part of the textbook for the undergraduate community, do you think parts or all of it could be appropriate for high school audience?
We really do hope that it could be an advanced course in, like, an elective at a Christian academy for homeschool. We hope that it could be a resource for, you know, anybody interested in getting a good background in, you know, what does science say about these things and how can Christians think about it in a way that both honors scripture and honors or respects the science. Thank you.
How many credit hours is it?
It's a 4-credit course, but it's a non-lab course.
Hmm.
That's pardon?
No, he said that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah.
You mentioned it's a bit of a challenge for the students to mesh their conclusions with the school's position, but how about you professors?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Wiedemann Statement of Faith is not terribly prescriptive on science, really. The only position that would be in tension would be Adam as a historical person. So, you know, and there of all those 5 positions, you can do that at least 3 of them. So it's not impossible, but there's nuance, and the students learn that. They understand that there's a lot of nuance to these positions. So that is, you know, something that we want them to, you know, to grapple with a little bit. So
we still have a couple minutes for questions, comments.
Any suggestions for things we've left out?
Yeah, there's one right there.
Yes. I'm just wondering if this is something that schools of theology could maybe use, or is it simple?
No, I think it'd be fantastic if there may be even some initiatives to seminaries where if they wanted to have a course on theories of origins, mm-hmm. I don't think you'd have to have, I think an individual could teach the class. I mean, they should have a science background, I think, but I think someone who's been reading in this area for a while could probably, you know, teach the course. I mean, I think they'd have to. We're really fortunate that the college allows 5 faculty to be involved in 1 course. I don't know how we've gotten away with it, but we just kind of sneak it.
They don't really count.
We only get 1 credit load. So we don't have time to go to each other's lectures as much as we'd like to, but we do try to get together occasionally to be on a panel so we can kind of tie things together. But yeah, it's expensive for a college or program to have, you know, team taught classes of that magnitude. So. Yes.
One more.
Maybe just 1 minute. Mm-hmm. We've got time. You had. The order in talking about the Big Bang and life and stars and so on is kind of reversed from the usual order in astronomy texts. Is that?
That's a good point. Not having written that part, I haven't thought about that. So it's kind of a different sequence of interesting. Yeah. I'd like to know more about that. But.
Anyone else?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.